Dave Holland of Waveney Words Talking Newspaper is sharing with us his 2017 interview with Gordon Wilcox, who witnessed the detonation of the first hydrogen bomb.
Gordon Wilcox was a 20-year-old RAF ground crew technician who was posted in 1957 to the territory of the Christmas Island in the Pacific. He witnessed the first British hydrogen bomb test on November the 8th, 1957, the first of 21. Here he describes his personal experience of the grapple tests and has lived to 80 to tell this long-forgotten tale.
I started off as a 15-year-old lad, joined up, went to RAF St Athan in South Wales for 3 years. Then as a 20-year-old, I was posted to RAF Christmas Island as a ground electrician. In other words, I wasn't working on aircraft, I was working on ground apparatus.
Anything that was electrical?
Yes, motor transport, batteries, airfield lighting.
When you went, were you keen to go?
Well, as a young lad, 20-year-old, you no ties, you going overseas for the first time, and in the 50s, you didn't have much chance to go overseas in the 50s, so if you were going to an aircraft, and as it was, we had the great enjoyment of going in an RAF Comet. So that was great because that was the first jet airliner in the world. So every time you pass through places, every time you landed, Iceland and Goose Bay and Offutt in Nebraska and Travis in near Frisco and Hawaii. And of course, because the Comet was the first jet airliner, everybody was out to view it.
When you got there, how many personnel were on the island?
Well, we were building up to the next test, which was, I didn't know at the time, but I found out very quickly it was only approximately 5 weeks later. So we were building up with numerous aircraft, Valiant bombers, two squadron to Canberra bombers, Shackletons for the weather, helicopters, Hastings, Dakotas. So it was very busy, and a lot of people were out there on squadrons just in and detachments. They weren't posted there. They were just there probably. They came out for the test. A lot of these squadrons were just there for 6 or 7 weeks. I should say there was 15, 18,000 people. All in tents at that time. There was no fixed wooden huts or things like that. We were all in tents.
What did they do with the population that was already living there?
Well, there were only about 200 islanders, and they were Gilbertese and Ellis Islanders, which weren't really native to Christmas Island, but they were native to the Pacific, and they were there as copper farmers, and they were put on a ship in case of emergency. So really, they were safer than us because we were just sitting on the ground on the island, sitting with our back to the bomb, and at the time of detonation with our knuckles in our eyes.
Was there a code name for these experiments?
In the Pacific, it was all grapple.
Why grapple?
Well, it's because a grappling hook has four prongs, and the four prongs stood for the three UK military units, that's the Navy and the Army and the Air Force, and the fourth one was for civilians, because most civilians were there were AWRE scientists, but we also did have some scientists, some other people who weren't, weather people, radar people, probably NAFI managers, only a few, but we did have a few civilians that weren't AWRE scientists.
Now, you were told to, was it to circle the whole thing 20 miles away?
People were at different distances and different places on the island. The first time I was something like 20 mile away, assuming that the detonation of the bomb was 5 miles off the coast and not nearer. But that's always often been questioned, because when you drop something from 40,000 feet, which is weighing that weight of 4 to 5 ton, 25 foot long, there's obviously wind. And the nature of that part of the Pacific is that all winds come in offshore. So all winds are blowing towards the island. So in that case, then there's great likelihood that that bomb was blown nearer to the coast than 5 miles. The second time, which was the next test in the following year, which was Grapple Y, because I was considered to be key personnel, so I was considered to be, well, more important, but I don't know if the benefit of being more important warrants you being 5 miles near, 5 miles nearer the bomb. That's questionable, but that's the case. And on the second time, I sat on the peri-track of the airfield and watched the Valiant taxi to the end of the runway, preparing to take off. Along with many other people who were sitting with me, we just hoped that it would take off and not crash, otherwise we'd be in trouble.
Were you given any sort of protection for these tests?
No protection clothing whatsoever, nor individual dosimeters to measure radiation levels the human body has been exposed to were worn by myself or other personnel. We were told to sit on the ground with our back to the detonation. And we were told when the bomb had gone and left the aircraft to close your eyes, place your fist in your eye sockets. Do not look at the mushroom cloud until told. We all sat there with KD shorts and socks and shirt and bush hat. And I did have, the second time, because I was 5 miles nearer, I did have a pair of white overalls. But because I was nearer, that was really a protection from the excess heat as I was nearer, but I never had any protective clothing for radiation. And basically, virtually no military person did. The only people who had full protection clothing were the scientists, and I believe they had a different budget to the military people. There was no money to enable us to have protective clothing. You have to remember, in the early 50s, having been, only 6 or 7 years after the Second World War, that the country was penniless. But they obviously had to provide protective clothing for the scientists because, as they're non-military, they wouldn't have gone if they hadn't had protection.
You're sitting out on the island with your back to the blast area. The aircraft drops the thing. Apart from the huge bright light you experienced, any other effects?
About a minute, you are warned about this. This is why you're sitting down. 50 seconds to a minute later, there is a blast. It's like an echo, but it's massive. And if you're standing up, you'll be blown away. And if you stand up, you could get hit by pieces of wood flying around. Because a chap who was on there who actually did put his head higher than he should have done, and a piece of wood flying around cut his head. And of course, it is so powerful because you actually see the palm trees really bending down as if they're heading to touch the ground. So you've got a very powerful... You see, all the aircraft that were there that weren't actually involved in the operation directly had to be airborne because they weren't safe on the ground because of the blast. The only aircraft that weren't airborne were the helicopters, and they were all roped down to stakes.
But you had loads of tents and all that.
This is the preparation we had to do. Take into account the blast. Tents, both apertures of the tent, opposite apertures, doorways, had to be opened. So the blast goes straight through rather than taking the tent up, you hope. We didn't have many wooden buildings, but we had a few, like laboratories, etc. The wooden buildings had their doors taken off the hinges, and the opening windows were unscrewed and taken out. These apertures were then covered with heavy-duty polythene, so the blast, if it was going to do damage, would rip the polythene to protect the building. And the reason why the polythene was there was to keep the actual dust out from the blast.
So when it went off, you had a huge flash, you had a tremendous amount of wind stirred up, and heat.
Yeah, tremendous.
Now, it's 40 degrees out there, you mentioned, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's a lot more than that once you've got that heat of that. You feel it on your back, even through white overalls. And you feel the heat on your back. And a lot of people did comment about the heat it feels. I can't say this myself, but from other people I know, they've explained, they've felt that the heat is coming from their inside. They're just feeling that it's too much. They make a quite a elaborate point of the heat, probably over the, and in it, well, added to the fact you can see your bones from your fingers with the flash. But the heat is very, very important.
After the bomb has gone off, contamination surely must have been a problem. They were known to be a bit grubby.
There's no such thing as a clean bomb.
Yes, but we're talking about early days, and they were particularly dirty in those days.
In Australia, because they were either ground, level with the ground, or close to the ground, majority of the bombs in Australia were very, very dirty indeed, because being near the ground, you actually suck up. So in the stem of the mushroom that you see on the picture, that stem of that mushroom is full of debris that's been sucked like a vacuum cleaner out of the ground. So all that is contaminated debris.
With the radioactivity?
Oh, definitely. Contaminated, yeah, debris. In the Pacific, 7 out of the 9 bombs that were detonated were high altitude, 7,000 to 8,000 feet, they were detonated. They dropped from 40,000 feet, detonated, depending on the fuse, at about 7,000 to 8,000 feet. So you didn't have quite so much debris. The vacuum cleaner, if you like, was further away from the ground. You haven't got the amount of debris, but you've got to take into account that the bombs in the Pacific were larger, more powerful, so the explosion would be greater. So you'd probably have more contamination. You'd have more uranium and plutonium, in addition with minor radioactive metals, in these weapons than you would have if you had a smaller atom bomb when we first started. But the hydrogen bombs, which are two, all the hydrogen bombs are multi-stage bombs. You cannot have a single-stage hydrogen bomb because every hydrogen bomb is triggered by an atom bomb.
It's now 60 years since the tests in the Pacific.
Yes, it's 60 years since the first H-bomb, megaton size, was detonated in 1957. Next week, November the 8th, 2017, will be the 60th anniversary of that detonation.
You were lucky and haven't been affected as far as you know.
As far as I know at the moment, but the concern is, health-wise, you don't know. Because it is known, I'm not saying it's well known, not every generation of childbirth is affected with the gene change. Sometimes they miss one or two out. So it could be that I have a grandchild who could be medically affected. And we have been told by the scientists that this cycle can go through up to 10 generations from the veteran.
Do you ever worry or think about all that contaminated dust that's obviously gone up into the atmosphere?
Well, most of it, I should say, something like 98% of the radiation that's gone up from all the nuclear weapons that have been detonated by all the countries must still be in the atmosphere. The only bit that can get out due to gravity is like a rocket. But basically, the radiation would not leave this country. And you are dealing with the two main radioactive materials you're dealing with, the most powerful and strongest are uranium and plutonium. Plutonium, actually, I'm led to understand to be the most powerful. You cannot detonate an atom bomb without either enriched uranium or plutonium. And as you've got an atom bomb in every H-bomb, it means that every time an atom bomb triggers, it's got at least some uranium or plutonium contained.
While you were on Christmas Island for the atomic test, were there any other hazards?
There was a daily hazard, really. We used to get sprayed 4 or 5 times a day with an Oster aircraft that flew over spraying DDT, usually at meal times when they considered there was more flies about, because they were obviously trying to kill the flies. But you've got to question whether the DDT was harmful to people who were sitting outside the tents, no cover at all. If you experience this over quite a few months, then you would get DDT in your meal and in your system. Over a long period, which could, I would have thought, be very questionable under the heading of health. You don't realise at this time you have been present when history has been made. The first British nuclear weapon of megaton size has been detonated.
Well, thank you, Gordon, for talking to me. It's been interesting hearing your story. You've been listening to Operation Grapple X with Gordon Wilcox. This is Dave Holland. Thanks for listening.